Thank you for listening to this podcast from TRE, Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain and around the world. For more information, please visit tre.radio.
En Camino with Kid Hogg.
Hello and welcome in Camino this Saturday, the 1st of August. White Rabbits, a pinch and a punch on the 1st of the month. With me in the studio live here on TRE, mi compañera Janie Jewson.
Ow, he punched me.
Oh no returns.
Good morning.
On the show today, the ups and downs of owning a second home in Spain, travel notes from Barcelona and Madrid, and courtesy of the veritable Andy Wood, a postcard from an island in the Caribbean, one half of which is likened to heaven, the other to hell, from Paraíso to Infierno, coming up at 11:30. Plus, chill in a portable human fridge in Tokyo, or on a portaloo on Kangaroo Island in South Australia. And Kirsty Mackay's impressions and memories of a childhood in an Andaluz pueblo to which she returns every August.
En Camino with Kid Hogg.
Well, all over Spain, and particularly in our pueblo of Gaucín, people return to their roots in August for family and feria. And not only locals who work away from their origins, but extranjeros who spent their formative years in a place once their home, still close to their hearts. One of which is Kirsty Mackay, who has made her annual pilgrimage back to the pueblo, from where she joins me now. Kirsty, good morning. Let me just put you on loudspeaker. Kirsty, hello. Are you good?
Yeah, I'm very well, thank you. Happy to wake up in
Gaucín
this morning again.
Okay, and how did you sleep? Because it's been hot, hasn't it? Devilish hot.
Well, it's not as hot as I was expecting, actually, but it has been hot. I'm hoping to buy a fan today to help, sleep.
Okay, because is there a mozzie problem, or is it just the heat?
There is a little bit of a mosquito problem. I'm quite lucky because they don't seem to like me.
Right.
But there are definitely lots of mosquitoes.
They go after kids, don't they? They go after young flesh.
Yeah, seem to be, fresh blood.
Have you got children here, then?
Jenny...
I've got...
Yeah, Jenny's asking if you've got kids here.
Yeah, I've got my little boy, and I'm with my sister and her two little kids as well. So, there they are. So yeah, it's a bit of a house full, okay. But it's great.
Hey, it's August. Lovely to have you all on. Now, listen, you grew up in Spain in the late 90s and early 2000s, left the village, you told me, about 15 years ago. Does being back feel like you never left in some sense?
Yeah, it does. It's just kind of... It does feel like home, to be honest, familiarity, and I keep seeing people around the village, and it's like, oh my God, it's that person, but they just obviously look older,
yes,
and they might have like two or three children.
Yeah, right.
But I guess it's the same for me. They must, I'm like that as well. but no, it will always be, I definitely have like strong roots here, yeah. And I'll always want to come back.
And Kirsty, can I ask you a question? Do you actually remember their names when you see these people looking older in your village?
Quite a lot of them, yeah. A lot of them were, they were in my class.
Okay. So school friends.
Yes. Yeah, so now and then.
Yeah.
Now middle aged. It must be a bit shocking, actually.
What? I don't know. What's middle aged? Like mid 30s? Is that middle aged?
I think coming pressing on 40 would be middle-aged.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Bad luck.
You're not there yet, I shouldn't think.
You arrived in Galsine with your family as a, 10-year-old, you told me before?
Yeah, I think I was 10, yeah.
Yeah, and in 1998, now, you were basically slooped out of your cosy little home in Somerset, was it?
Yeah, just outside Bristol.
Right, by a sort of little village nestling in the wolds of northern Somerset, and you arrived with your family. Can you remember your first impressions of Andalusia, of where you wound up?
I think we all took it very differently. I've got a younger brother and an older sister, and I think we all took it very differently. I don't know. I was quite sort of detached because I didn't really have a good time at primary school before we left, so I didn't have great attachment. And I think I love change and meeting new people, new places. So I was just excited, I think. And obviously, yeah, it was an adventure all together. And I generally had a great time. I got a little bit bullied because we were one of the first expat families to move to the village. So I do remember struggling a little bit in that way at school and stuff. Yeah. But
how was it energetically not being able to speak a whole lot of Spanish? In fact, very little Spanish when you arrived. How was that? That must have felt quite isolating.
It was. But as soon as I learnt Spanish, it changed everything, obviously, and I was sort of part of the gang. I just remember really happy times, really happy times.
Oh, that's lovely.
Acceptance in the end. And yeah, I think my brother and sister were the same. My sister was 13, so obviously I think she struggled the most because it's such an awkward age, isn't it? 13. But I think we're all quite adaptable. Extremely grateful for the experience as adults.
Oh, good. So there's no weight of blame attached to your potentially irresponsible parents.
No, grateful because it's made us who we are now and molded us in, very grateful. Grateful that we didn't just go straight into international school also.
Fantastic. How long did it take you to learn the language? Can you remember?
Properly well, probably about 2 years.
Okay, but you could communicate sufficiently within a much shorter amount of time in order to make friends and everything. Did you feel
lost? I'm talking speaking like a native, basically, in 2 years. When you're so young, it's just so much easier and you're just here, you're just chucked in the deep, submerged. So, yeah.
And have you kept your language? Have you kept Spanish?
Yeah. I don't use it very often. I miss it.
Yeah. Where do you live now?
In Wales,
okay.
Believe it or not.
So you don't use it a great deal. Don't use a lot of Spanish there, I imagine.
No, I don't. I try and talk to my son in Spanish, but he just gets. He thinks it's a bit weird.
Right. So you've lived in rural Andalusia, studied in Granada, Barcelona, worked in Tarifa, you tell me. Subsequently, then you moved back to the UK. So what do you miss about Spain? How does that occur to you when you get back here? What's that quotient?
I mean, the obvious one is the weather. the and then there's I miss food. I don't know, just the openness, the freedom, if you understand what I mean by that.
Being outdoors and having the freedom and the space.
The lack of population as well. Being outdoors, yeah. The lack, the, like, the...
What I notice when I come back is the uplift of saying hello to people, the normality of greeting people on the street, people you don't necessarily even know their names. You just you say hola, buenos dias. That yeah. is an openness. It is literally an uplift. Rather than averting your gaze or staring at the ground or staring at them without saying anything.
That
I think is really... The other thing is toothpicks.
toothpicks. Yeah. I think, yesterday we went to the Centro de Salud in the village just for my little niece, and we were sitting there waiting, and everybody that came in, it was like, hola, buenas, and... that probably wouldn't happen if you went to the, you know, to the doctors in the UK. I can't imagine people going in, hello, good morning, everyone. Yeah. Da, da, da. Like what you were just saying.
And people ask, did people ask what was wrong with you? Because that happens to me when I'm in the waiting room. It's like, you don't really want to tell them about your hemorrhoids, you know?
I think that's an older person thing, actually. Well, older people are always talking about what's wrong with them, aren't they?
but it's just you tend to keep that to yourself. But anyway, I love the openness of it.
Well, but another question, Kirsty. You said the lack of or less population. What do you mean? You said you like the less people being around. Is that what you meant? Do you mean that England is crowded?
It's just so claustrophobic, isn't it? Immediately, like you. Sorry, Donnie, you're breaking up there.
No, she's finished the question.
I finished.
Right. I think it's just like every.
I went quiet.
We're driving around, just driving around the main roads. There's not nearly as many traffic jams as in the UK. Just as an example, it just feels way less claustrophobic and
less pressure.
It's bigger with less people in it.
Okay, because you're in the mountains. You come down to the coast, young lady, and you will see a very different world.
I know, I feel like,
Have you done any beach days yet, Kirsty?
No, I think we might go down later today.
Okay, well, good luck with that. Listen, it's an absolute delight talking to you. Thank you so much for letting us into the window of your revisit, your reconnection with your pueblo.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
It's a symptom of autumn, that batty month when, we're all on holiday. Yippee! okay, well, look, lovely to talk. Have a great day.
Enjoy the rest of your holiday.
Thank you for having me.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
So something completely different now and a little bit more serious. And we don't tend to review breaking news here on En Camino, Janie, do we?
No, we don't.
Yesterday's events in Ceuta?
Oh, yes, and I saw a bit of an update this morning.
You have? I mean, unbelievable, really. Mm. If you don't know what's happened, Ceuta is the Spanish enclave in North Africa where it can only be a likely harbinger of what is to come. I bought two newspapers this morning because I wanted to check it out. In the Financial Times, alarm at an influx of 60,000 migrants.
60? I thought it was fewer than that, but anyway.
60,000. Spain's Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez has condemned one of the biggest influxes of unauthorised immigrants in EU history as an attack on the country's territory after about 60,000 people entered one of its two enclaves in the north coast of Africa. Speaking from Ceuta, a tiny territory that has been a long-standing flashpoint in relations between Spain and Morocco, Sanchez said that the incident was an attack, a violation on Spain's territorial integrity, as it sparked criticism from politicians across Europe. Sanchez rushed a suitor yesterday after thousands of people swam around a breakwater from Morocco, overwhelming Spanish police and forcing authorities to deploy the army. I've been to Ceuta lots of times crossing into Morocco, and it does feel like a sort of accident waiting to happen, a sort of pressure point surrounded by fences and people clamouring to get in.
And I think part of the law in Spain is that people are allowed it to stay in and seek a refuge, providing they've swum or come in on boats or clambered, as they did in this case, around the rocks as well.
Yeah,
to get into the.
There was actually on BBC's Today programme this morning, I was listening to as I was coming in. I can't remember his name, Aguilar, I think he was called, but he's a member of the Sanchez government defending Spain's rights on Spain's record on human rights. But different perspective from the right-wing newspaper ABC. ABC cites concerns of European leaders from Italy, Finland, France and Germany, who are like, because they're EU, this is an EU border, whilst revealing that the Spanish military high command criticises border control policy, not because this is a migratory crisis, but because it's an attack on our frontiers, something like an invasion.
Yes, and I also saw, and who knows whether it's true or not, it mooted on the internet that this was somehow triggered by Trump's influence with Spain having won the World Cup and Israel and, for example, backing Argentina and America backing...
Really?
Yeah. I mean, it was all very complicated, and also saying, you know, it's actually a way of trying to diminish the Spanish power.
Well, Trump doesn't like Spain.
No, because
Spain hasn't supported Iran.
And also, you know, the smugglers, people trying to get the people over, were actually supposedly promoting the idea that, I don't know if any of that is true. What do we know?
Sounds like Uber conspiracy, but there's always that stuff around. Writing in ABC, Professor Luis de la Cortes Ivanez says, who's a professor at a university in Madrid, he says that the avalanche of migrants yesterday reveals Moroccan indifference, a lack of foresight on behalf of Madrid, and the fragility of Spain in the face of demographic pressure that threatens the security of not only European Union.
And again this morning I briefly saw that, and again I can't say if it's true or not, that the majority of the people who swarmed over have been sent back now.
Apparently yes, that's the story.
Yeah.
They've been persuaded to go home.
Yes.
Home is probably a long way away from Ceuta, but the pressure will build. It's a demographic thing, isn't it?
It's interesting.
About climate change
What is going to happen now? Exactly.
I wrote a poem for August.
No, did you?
Yeah, it goes like this. Besieged by heat, beat a retreat, lethargy of a life half-baked, behind hatches battened down, torpor of sweat beneath hairs on the back of your neck. A World Cup shaped hole in your life now that it's all over, grey matter drained out of your head, memory fades to grey in thermal dementia.
Oh, very good. I didn't know you were a poet, Kit.
Oh, right. You're dishing. It's not complete, that, but I thought...
We should put out a vote.
I thought I'd share it, because it segues quite nicely into the next item, which is we go to Tokyo. And with summer becoming increasingly hotter, new ideas are sprouting to help people cope with oppressive heat. Say hello to the human refrigerator. It's called the Doheman Box, and it's basically like a mobile cupboard that you set up, and it's a cooling booth.
Yeah,
and it's designed to cool just one thing.
That's perfect. I mean, I do sometimes, when it gets very hot, try to get in the refrigerator, you know, a little bit, you know, stand right in the doorway, to pick up some of the coolness.
Okay, right, all right. So I don't think you'll find any cucumbers or eggs or anything in this. This is only for...
I think it's a great idea.
For your body.
Yeah, yeah.
It's probably a bit warmer than a fridge. The ambient temperature is... You can set the ambient temperature, obviously. It tends to be set as a norm of 15 degrees Celsius. You sit in a chair facing the world, just the other side of a glass door. So if someone comes in or someone comes by, you're sat there and you're looking out.
Is this out on the street or something?
Well, interesting you say. It's supposed to be for workers in hot environments like construction sites.
Okay.
So, you know, instead of a portaloo.
Very sensible. Cool box.
Actually, you could combine a portaloo with a cool box address. That's a whole idea. I'm going to go on to that. It's factories, warehouses, outdoor event venues. So you can sit in your cool box and watch cricket, for example. the human refrigerator relieves symptoms of heat exhaustion in just 10 minutes.
But, I mean, why not just... I mean, if you did it at football matches and stuff like that, I mean, air conditioning surely would be a little bit more economical.
Darling, you can see to stadium. Unless you close. Yeah.
No,
I mean, that would be massive. It's much better to have your own Doheman box. You enjoy, inside it, you enjoy cold air that's wafted towards your head, neck, shoulders and back, instantly providing cooling relief.
I'm rather liking the idea of it this moment. It's not that cool in here, I have to say.
It requires no installation work. It can be used in and outdoors. It's mounted on wheels to make it truly transportable. I think it weighs rather a lot, though. You have to sort of tow it about. But trust the Japanese.
Well, exactly. So, are this, you know, for public use? Is this the idea?
Oh, yeah, they're for sale. Let me give you the name again. In case anybody's interested, it is the Doheman Box. D-O, new word, H-I-E-M-O-N. Doheman Box. And I don't think they're available yet in Spain, although you might try Amazon or shipping them directly from Japan. When you live on Kangaroo Island, South Australia. Have you been there?
I haven't, no.
No, me neither. and you can't afford a portaloo, talking of small cabins.
Yeah.
And anyway, want something more ambient than a smelly, airless plastic lavatory, what do you do? Well, you build your own outhouse, a dunny in Australia, and you put it on a barge and sail it from the mainland to Kangaroo Island, which is apparently a bit of a hazardous voyage. On this bizarre journey, in a barely seaworthy barge, Alex Craig and Paul Graham crossed a potentially hazardous stretch of the Southern Ocean from Cape Jarvis to the mainland, from on the mainland to the aforesaid Kangaroo Island. The dunny installed safely in its new location. The two boys settled back on the barge to barbecued pork ribs and gourmet sausages. This is an exciting piece of news.
Absolutely brilliant. It reminds me of when I was watching The Repair Shop on the BBC TV the other night. And
Janie, your television diet, it's like baby food, isn't it? I mean, all this reality TV. How much time do you spend a week watching reality TV?
And it's not reality. Well, I suppose that was reality. I think probably about 1 hour a day maximum, which is a lot less than most people spend on their mobile phones, which I don't do.
Okay, Jane.
So can I finish?
Yeah, please do. Sorry. So admonishing.
I think I on the repair shop, there I was amazed to see a very large leather kangaroo being repaired that looked extremely like the one you used to have that you picked up from a rubbish heap.
No, I picked it up from a skip in Marbella.
Exactly.
I drove past this kangaroo. It's had its head out of the skip and it was saying, please rescue me, mate, rescue me.
Okay.
And so I did a Yui and I came back and I picked it up. Yes, it's a perfect leather kangaroo.
And I was
patent
amazed.
Leather.
It was very precious to this particular person. I'm going through my book here to try and find the name of who it was, but it was a musician and a performer who was quite well known, and it was his. He actually based a song around this kangaroo, and it was very precious to him.
Was it "Tie Me Kangaroo Down, Sport"?
No, it wasn't that one. That's Rolf Harris, isn't it? I do know that one.
But that's the only song I know about kangaroo.
Blow Me Down. I can't find his name, but anyway, that was quite amusing and interesting.
Darling, while you're doing that, let me tell you about a bull, because last Thursday at 8:15 p.m. and it was an ordinary evening at Bar Gussie, a local locale. A bar, yeah, in Ribes de Freser in Girona, Catalonia. You have to picture the scene here. There are customers inside and on the patio. Usual chat, few drinks, when a 900-kilo bull wanders into the bar.
Oh, my goodness.
Demonstrating remarkable composure, one of Bar Gussie's waiters coaxed the bull to turn it around and leave. Without incident, but this is all caught on CCTV, actually. The bull's owner, Juan Carbonell, said that the macho bovine had got separated from his cows, became confused and went looking for them in the bar. The whole tranquil event was, as I say, caught...
He didn't ask for a beer or anything.
No, I just think he... I think he was looking for his girls, but they weren't in there. So it's, anyone see my car? My cars? Yeah.
Okay, okay. Okay. Oh well, that's very brave of somebody to do that. I mean, what, I suppose what else could you do apart from run?
Well, run to where?
Exactly.
The lavish cubicles will probably fall already. I mean, there's probably no escape out of the back door. So the bull's standing. Yeah, anyway, it's a lovely scenario and all ended happily ever after. We're going to try and get hold of Andy Wood, who's in America, to talk to us. And he's going to be sending us a postcard from the Dominican Republic.
En Camino with Kit Hogg.
Now, if you haven't heard of the island of Hispaniola, you probably have heard of the Dominican Republic, the Caribbean nation that shares the island with Haiti. The 22nd largest island in the world, Christopher Columbus brought its existence to European attention in 1492, and then it was inhabited by the indigenous Taino Amerindians. The French colonized the west of the island, the Spanish the east. By a treaty signed in 1697, the west became Haiti, the east the Dominican Republic. Recently returned from there, regular contributor, friend of the show, Andy Wood. Andy, good morning to you.
Hey, Kit. Good morning. Good morning, Janie.
Good morning.
Lovely to have you with us. Let me just give Janie some juice. There we are. Can we hear you, Janie?
Yes. Good morning.
Yeah. So, mate, we were getting a letter from New Jersey from you, but you were in the Dominican Republic on holiday, I'm guessing.
Correct. Yeah, last week.
And how is the Dominican Republic, for example, I'm going to ask a cynical question here. How is it any different from Florida, for example?
Well, it's a lot different. I mean, it has a beautiful Caribbean vibe. It's a very interesting country. As you said, it's part of Hispaniola. It's split. There's about 11 million Dominicans and around 11 million Haitians. But the Dominican Republic, fastest growing economy in Latin America, they have around 11 million tourists every year. It just struck us as a very, very friendly people, very nice, very modern facilities. The airport, when we got to the airport, God, look at that line. Went on forever. And it went through in no time. They were all automated and facial recognition. And it was all very slick. So it's the infrastructure is there. They have a growing economy. They have little unemployment. Almost the complete opposite of, you know, the other side of the island that gets the same, you know, the same weather. It's the same soil. And poor Haiti is been ravaged. People call it a cursed island, and there's a story why they call it a cursed island. But the reason that it was sort of front and center is because just 4 days ago, I think, so July 27th, the TPS ended for Haitians, and that's temporary protected status. So when a country has a lot of internal strife, the U.S. government can grant temporary protected status. So right now it's Syria and Haiti, but the Trump administration got a court to lift TPS from Haitians. There's between 300 and 350,000 Haitians in the U.S. under TPS, and now they're all going to be sent back. That's the conclusion. So it's sort of remarkable, really.
So can I ask you why did they? What are they doing in the States anyway? They got the hell out of Haiti to save their lives.
Anarchy's ruled in Haiti for a long time, right? Gangs ruling Port-au-Prince. It's been. I mean, they've had terrible weather, you know, has a terrible hurricane damage on top of this failure of civil society has sort of turned into a dystopian nightmare. A lot of people made haste and sought and were granted temporary status, mm-hmm. temporary protected status in the United States. And over time, that number grew to 300, 350,000. I mean, these are people who just don't want to be killed or want a better life.
Do you have an idea? Do you give us a sense of the political machinations that are going on in Haiti? Is it a democracy? Is it run by mafia? Is there a constitution even?
Yeah, it's that they have very, very weak institutions. They've had an international force, I think mostly made up of sort of UN troops from Kenya, who are supposed to be there to try and, you know, bring some semblance of order. They say that these various gangs are running Port-au-Prince. I don't think there's any domestic flights now going in and out. Although they seem to be making some efforts to restore order. And in fact, I just heard this week that they've announced their first election, which would be in 10 years, in January. And the commentators are very skeptical if that will action. But it's just a weak, corrupt. It's kidnappings, roadblocks. It's roadblocks, people leaving because basically the social order, political institutions no longer exist.
Mm. And did I hear you say include Syrians in this
Syrians were also under the temporary protected status, and they still have it.
Ah, okay, so they're not about to be sent back to Haiti.
No, it wasn't TPS that was removed. It was TPS for Haitians specifically.
Okay. What sense of Haiti do you get from the other side of the border? I mean, I'm imagining Hispaniola to be a little bit like heaven and hell. One side is sort of...
Yeah, I think that's a fair description. I mean, for 40 years, they got independence from Spain. And they went through a turbulent time, but for the last 40 years, they just sort of seem to grow the economy and really sort of move forward. I mean, the roads are nice. People are super friendly. There's tons of building going on. They say you can tell if it's a hotel. If it's a hotel, it'll be 5 or 6 stories. If it's condos, there'll be 12 or 14 stories. They see all this construction going on. But the resort we were in, I got the impression, yes, people are, staff are resort friendly, but they were just friendly people. Service was excellent. Food was great. You know, busy. It was just really lovely. Really lovely.
Right. So, but on the other side of the border, weird, eh? That there should be such a difference.
Very weird. Very weird. They both get the same hurricanes. But I think part of it is that, as you said at the outset, you had the French side and the Spanish side. And when the French were thrown out by a remarkable historical event with the slave revolution there, the uprising, the French left, but then they insisted on sort of reparations for the lost plantations and things. So right from day one, Haiti, as an independent nation, was faced with a crippling debt. So that got them off to a bad start, and it just seemed that that on the Spanish side, when they got independent, they just seemed to have a head start, and they did well. One sort of rather macabre story is, which this is actually documented as historical fact, that the slaves went to a particular hill and sacrificed a pig with a voodoo priest before the revolution. This was to inspire and encourage for the forthcoming battle. Mm-hmm. And the participants would drink blood, and they would take the hairs from this black pig and think that would be a talisman of protection. And then they successfully got rid of the French. So now what evangelists have said, notably in the US, is that they made a pact with the devil, and so Haiti is cursed. And they have gone to Haiti, groups have gone to Haiti, or assembled 200 pastors at one time in Florida and done a sort of exorcism, or tried to cast out these demons from Haiti to try and change everything. And I think it is fair to say it does appear as a cursed nation, but none of the spiritual interventions seem to have made any difference thus far.
Okay. And how are relations between the Dominican Republic and Haiti?
It was hard to peel the onion. When I sort of mentioned it, someone said, the one guy was trying to sort of get just see what their opinion was. He said, I went and visited there. He said, a long time ago, about 10 years ago. He said, it was terrible. Never going back. So that, you know, it's 10 years ago, you thought it was terrible. So I think they just sort of, it's almost like a shrug their shoulders. Well, we're getting on with what we're doing, and we hope, you know, we wish you luck.
Yeah. And now I'm remembering someone called Papa Doc.
Yeah, Papa Doc, yeah, he led the Tonton Macoute. I mean, it's just one sort of criminal, corrupt leader after another, really.
Right. All right, a sad history.
With reigns of terror, reigns of terror.
But what an inspirational start for a bunch of slaves to chuck the French out. You know, what an
incredible.
What a shame.
Incredible.
I'm loving the sacrifice of the pig and all of that stuff, and then the slaves.
Incredible.
Just, yeah, you know, and how sad that it turned into this.
Yeah, it's a disaster.
Janie, you want to?
If you're looking for a friendly, beautiful place to go take a few days, then I would say you could do a lot worse than fly into the Dominican Republic.
It sounds gorgeous. I would.
Yeah, it's really nice.
I mean, is it a rocky island? Is it lots of beaches and small pueblos, or is it very built up?
Well, it's there's a lot of building going on. The sand is like sugar, really, really fine sugar.
Right, love that.
And it's just beautiful, and it's a tropical island here. There's a lot of palm trees, and the waters are gorgeous. I did some snorkeling there, and it was, saw lots of fish, and it was just very relaxing and a really nice place to go.
While I was researching, talking to you, and I read that it had the highest mountain in the Caribbean. Is that correct?
Another claim to fame.
Yeah.
And is it the crossing over between the two borders, is it possible you can cross over into the other side easily, or do you not know?
Yeah, I think there is cross-border commerce, but as far as migration, I think the Dominican border is effectively closed.
Okay.
Right. No, I'm imagining day trips to Haiti. You know, you could send.
Yeah, I mean, visit you know, you want to.
The mountain of the sacrifice of the black pig. And for the.
Yeah, right. You can tour around.
For the tourists who get bored of beaches with Muscovado sugar, they can take a day trip to Haiti, the other side.
The other interesting little weird fact about Haiti, I mean, they have exports, but their number one export is actually shortstops. There's more Dominican baseball players in the Major League best than any other country. I mean, they are crazy about baseball, and they grow some of the best baseball players.
Right, man. Did you say shortstops? What are they?
Yeah, shortstops. That's a position on the baseball field.
Yeah. Well, which position is it?
The shortstop?
Yes. Are they like the wicket?
It's the guy who stops things on the short end.
Right, okay. This is clear. This is completely clear now, man. Thank you very much.
You're getting way above my pay grade.
You're not a baseball fan?
No.
Okay. Listen, man, we're going to have to leave it there. It's been It's been a fascinating visit to a Caribbean island.
And Kit, there's... we have a truly global audience because my friend John's tuning in from Thailand. Hi, John.
Hey, John. That's great. Well, and that's you, man. You are so charismatic. You bring the folks in globally.
All right, mate.
What can I say? Thank you so much.
Thank you, Alan.
You have a lovely everybody. Have a lovely weekend. Yeah. Stay safe.
Okay. Bye bye now.
Camino with Kit Hogg.
Back with Kit and Janie on Homegrown Radio. This is En Camino on Talk Radio Europe. It's time for that part of the show we call Things That Grow. And the things that are growing today, Janie, are imbued with a controversial but uncanny intelligence. Is that right?
Things are growing. I mean,
this octopus.
Octopi. I don't know what.
Did you see that film?
Yes, I did. I did. It was just absolutely charming. I loved it. What was it called?
It was called Something in the Octopus. The Man and the Octopus or something?
Something like that.
It was about a South African biologist who was diving every day and established a relationship with an octopus.
That's right.
And every day he went.
He did.
And gradually got to know this weird-looking creature who developed into a friend, trusted companion, or something at least that it was possible to relate to, and the octopus related back to him.
Yeah.
It was the most beautiful film.
It really, really was. It was very moving. And the man who was doing the filming, you know, he hit a low point in his life, and he then was a diver anyway down there, and it really just changed his life for the better, and he ended up diving then with his son right towards the end of the film. After the octopus had actually died, I believe they kept going and more people started joining, and they're now, you know, studying these octopi, and it's a reserve. But we spoke a few weeks ago about...
I've just got it up. It's called My Octopus Teacher.
That's right. Well done.
And a filmmaker begins diving in a kelp forest off the coast of South Africa and meets a female octopus who casts a spell on him. So it's a love story as well.
Yes.
I mean, amazing.
Yes.
Eh?
Yes. I mean, it was very beautiful, and it is very difficult. I mean, I'm not really a heavy fish eater anyway, but I did sometimes eat octopus. I'm never going to eat octopus again.
Having seen the film, I have never eaten octopus.
Great.
In fact, my son Koibi went to Galicia earlier this year, and I said to him, don't eat octopus.
Okay.
I'm not sure whether he did or not, but anyway.
Well, we'll have to ask him. But anyway, of course, then there was been talk, because it's such popular dish, pulpo, in
pulpo gallego,
yeah, in Spain and other countries, and we export octopus to other countries. I mean, they're starting to invade the coasts of the UK now, and they're talking about, oh, yummy, yummy. But, of course, now, you know, octopus farming came on as a possibility, and so talking about Pescanova wanted to start, and Nueva Pescanova wanted to start an octopus farm in Gran Canaria. And we spoke about this, and the actual intelligence of these creatures was being put forward by some of the people who are backing up the wildlife protection and all this sort of thing, and saying this cannot be done. These are too high an intelligent creature to farm them, and they're also territorial. To put them in these sort of environments, they apparently get very aggressive with one another as well. And
I imagine you lose your mind.
Exactly.
It's like putting a hen in a battery.
Yes, yes, exactly.
The octopus, I don't think, have got a bigger brain than a hen. It's a very small brain.
Yes. Anyway, however, I saw 5 days ago there was a post from Sea Legacy. It says, good news, the world's first octopus farm has been cancelled after 5 years of tireless campaigning by Compassion in World Farming and unwavering public pressure. Nueva Pescanova has abandoned plans for an octopus farm in Gran Canaria, Spain. Octopuses are incredibly intelligent. Scientists estimate that they're about as smart as a dog, with around 500 million neurons. Along with a donut-shaped brain in their head, they also have a mini brain in each of their 8 arms. They can solve puzzles, use tools, and even recognize people. So farming them would cause serious suffering. It would also be unsustainable, damaging the environment and biodiversity. So these have been now cancelled. I mean, it's absolutely brilliant. And interest in developing octopus farms still remains. So the next step is for governments to ban them outright. And for now, Sea Legacy are celebrating this win for octopuses everywhere. Yay!
Yay, yeah. And kind of good on Pescanova. I mean, did they do it just because of political pressure, or did they have an awakening of conscience?
Who I wonder. Knows? One doubts. I mean, it's a business, isn't it? They're interested in making money.
Yep, but if you get your business name sullied by...
true, yes. But reputation. That's
not good business.
No, it certainly isn't.
Yeah.
I mean, and talking about things that grow, I mean, I don't know what's growing for you, Kit, but not much is growing in my garden at all.
No, I'm struggling to keep my garden. No, I'm not. I've got lots of water, but it does need watering.
That's probably why you've got lots of mosquitoes as well. But, anyway, I'm kind of doing my growing, really. I'm watering my garden, and we did get attacked last night,
Briefly, any vegetables coming up? Tomatoes,
tomatoes have died.
Pepper.
No, papayas are looking gorgeous. The decapitated one has regrown from the top. I've got some boniatos that are now growing. The
sweet potatoes.
Yep. Comfrey has resprouted, which is absolutely brilliant. And I'm growing mung beans inside the house because they're delicious.
You're giving me an appetite. It's time for brunch. Listen, it's been lovely having your company today with Janie Jewson and me, Kit Hogg, on En Camino. Hasta la semana que viene. Buen fin de semana.
Bye.
You've been listening to a TRE production. If you've enjoyed this program, there'll be another episode waiting for you next week, right here on this platform, where you can also access our extensive back catalogue of shows and interviews. For more information on our live programming, social media channels, and apps, and how to contact Talk Radio Europe, please visit tre.radio.